We are back again on the axis of football. Off-season edition continues, Char. Have a bit of a hiatus, man. What you been up to these past couple weeks, buddy? I've missed you, truth be told.
Yeah, same here, buddy. It's June. It's getting to be summer soon. I've kind of been complaining. The weather got up to 87 earlier in the week.
And poor thing. Yeah, why don't you go to Texas and see how it is over here?
I knew I was going to get that reaction from you. But yeah, it's summertime. I'm starting to get back into football brain. You know, yeah. I was gonna say football shape, but that's not happening. Get back into football brain and start counting down the days. Been doing some fantasy football mock-up drafts and analyzing fantasy football values. And you know how deep into that I get.
Yeah.
So it's getting to be fun again, man. It's getting to be fun again.
I got to say, you are a great resource for fantasy. I love talking to you because it's not, you know, you're not somebody who's just going to tell you, oh, start this guy. You're really good at getting information and data from different sources. And then for me, at least allowing me to make a good decision. So I appreciate that. I'm sure we'll all
benefit. I appreciate that. Thank you. No, what's funny is that I have a lot of people that utilize me as a resource for fantasy football because you know how much, I mean, I actually put money and
yeah,
time. I probably spent during the season, I would say 10, 15 hours analyzing data, maybe 20 hours a week for fantasy and sports betting.
Well, there's money involved, right? What better motivation is there than that? Yeah, man, I'm not fully football brain yet. My Golden State Warriors are in the finals. We got one more victory to get that championship. Hopefully.
Oh, what's the series at?
3-2. 3-2. So
you know what? That's awesome. Because when they fell behind 0-1, I haven't watched basketball in 3 years. So, but yeah, when I found out that Golden State fell back 1-0 and that they were ahead by like 24 in the third quarter and they blew it, I said, okay, they're going to come back with a vengeance. I went and got a +130 on them to win the series, which means for every $100 I bet, I'm going to win $130. And I bet them to win the championship. So, and this is how little I know about it. I had bet money on it. I didn't even know what the series is at.
So we both have skin in the game for different reasons.
Right.
But yeah. So tonight's game 6 in Boston. And if we can't take care of business, we got game 7 back in the Bay Area this weekend. So
I have a question for you. Are you one of those guys that says he's a Golden State Warrior fan? And then if the Mavericks are in the playoffs, you're a Mavericks fan. And then
I'm a Warrior fan. I've always been a Warrior fan. Now, I'm not as big a basketball fan. Like, I'll be the first one to say, I don't watch basketball. I don't watch regular season basketball. I just don't, right?
Right.
It's just, there's too many games. But right, I have watched almost every single NBA playoff because that's intriguing. There's actually, like, something at stake.
Yeah.
It's just 82 games, which is why I love the NFL. The fewer games, the nature of football, you can't play all those games, and it just makes each game so much more valuable. It's intriguing, right? You got to wait a week, the delayed gratification. I personally enjoy that more as a sports fan. But so I've not quite got into that football brain. The summer's kind of been a little bit busy for us as well, Char. We were in Cabo a couple weeks back. We're actually taking the fam to New York for a few
days.
Oh
my God, you poor thing, you.
That'll be this Texas heat. So, you know, gotta stay away from here as much as I can over the summer, at least. So,
you know what, if I ever move out of California, and again, the only reason why I'm in California, besides my businesses and stuff, because obviously I could do business, you know, set up shop anywhere. But the only reason why I'm in California is because of the weather. And if I were to ever move to the great state of Texas, which is probably my favorite state in the union, I would have to go and like buy a place on the eastern seaboard of like Vermont or, you know, not Vermont, but like Maine or a place like that to just like
to balance it out.
And then like, you know, like 6 months out of the year or 4 months out of the year, 5 months out of the year, just be up there.
Bro, come out here, man. We got you. Third largest Iranian population. You'll be a celebrity out here. Okay. It's gonna be great. I promise you. It's gonna be.
You know what's funny is that my girlfriend Angelina, you've met her. And my kids I'm just dad and I'm just Shark, you know, to them. So it's like they don't quite understand that. I mean, they understand that I was in the NFL, but they don't understand. Like it doesn't click. Like it was such a long time ago. So we ended up going to a wedding in San Diego. A really, really big wedding. And it was shocking to Angelina that people were just coming out of the blue, like Iranians from all over the country. And how many times, like I was getting more picture requests than the wedding party. Just be like during the reception, people coming out. And it's, yeah, so I can only imagine. It happens when I go to LA. It happens when I go to DC. Listen, the Iranian fans are awesome. They still remember, so.
And you know, there's just not, you know, a lot of Iranians that come in Shar's shape and size, right? So it's just, you tend to stand out.
When I'm kind of a mutant. If there were X-Men and you know in the Middle East, I'd probably be one of them. But
you know. At a wedding, too, I can imagine all the fabric needed to cover you up, man.
That's why I got my own clothing line. I mean, you know how I do it.
Indeed. Hey, man, listen, last thing I'll say before we get into the football stuff. Last night, we don't talk about music a lot, Char, but last night, my wife and I went to a Backstreet Boys concert. And I was telling people, everyone says, oh, your wife's dragging you. No, I dragged my wife. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I am a Backstreet Boys fan. I unfortunately never got to really see them perform in their heyday, so to speak. And so they were literally performing 5 minutes down the street from me at a place called the Toyota Music Factory. And it was just, it was incredible, man. And the nostalgia for me, that was my high school days. You know, you got your puppy love, the crushes that you're singing these songs about. And it was just, but then, and then to be able to take my wife, of course, my forever crush, and have that experience.
Oh, that's so sweet. Cool. Look at you. So I have a quick question for you. Is Backstreet Boys the ones with Justin Timberlake, or is that a different
one? No, that will be NSYNC. That's all right. We'll forgive you for that one.
Sorry.
That,
yeah.
That's NSYNC. So Backstreet Boys is like Nick Carter. I don't know if you remember. So they were like
Nick Carter. Is that the black Nick Carter or the white Nick Carter?
Definitely the white, the blonde white Nick Carter. Yeah.
Okay. No, but isn't there a Nick Carter that used to do, was like he emceed America Got Talent and stuff like that?
I think you're thinking of Nick Cannon. That's Nick.
Oh, Nick Cannon. Okay. Sorry. Listen. I don't know.
Backstreet Boys is like, you know, I want it that way. Remember that song? I want it that way.
Is that with Mark Wahlberg or whatever? Which one is that?
You're going back. You're talking about Marky Mark, man. Good Vibrations. That's a totally different era.
No, but his brother was part of one of those boy bands, wasn't he?
Oh yeah. No. Not.
Okay, hold on. You can't blame me. You cannot blame me for freaking not knowing my boy bands. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, but I'm sure you've heard of them before, right? I mean, you've heard the name.
I've heard of Backstreet Boys. I've heard of NSYNC. Yes. And here's the thing. I'm a huge Justin Timberlake fan. I think he's the closest thing that we're ever going to get, or in my lifetime, to Michael Jackson and Michael Jackson's greatness. So I love Justin Timberlake.
Probably Backstreet Boys for some people like you are less known because none of those guys went and had solo careers like Timberlake did. But you know, I no problem with NSYNC either. I like NSYNC, but Backstreet Boys to me are kind of like the OG boy band. A lot of nostalgia. I tell you, man, nostalgia is something that everybody loves and chases. That whole crowd was like basically like it was mostly, you know, women, you know, in my age group between the, you know, 30s and 40s.
Oh, so way too old for me.
Dar's not joking, by the way. No, but it was a lot of fun. I don't go to concerts a lot, but just, you know, I don't know what the equivalent is for you, man. I mean, that's a good question. You know, what is that equivalent for you of maybe like a group you jammed out to in high school? It brings back memories when you hear their songs. Because for me, Backstreet Boys is definitely one of those groups. Do you have one like that for you?
Oh, you better believe it. I keep in mind, you know, I grew up in a surf town. I grew up in a surf town where we would go surfing, and then we would have beach parties at night, and like boom, you know, we would go night surfing and stuff like that. We did The Cure. What?
Oh, The Cure.
The Cure. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It was the late 80s, early 90s. And I think, you know, one of the greatest bands of all time and one of the most underrated bands of all time, because their instrumentals and the way they play their, you know, and Robert Smith's voice is just so different. It's just so different. And it takes a little bit getting used to. And then this, you know, they look totally goth, but they sing about the most loving thing. Like it's phenomenal. And if you guys aren't familiar with the Cure, go and listen to their lyrics and it will absolutely freak you out.
Really?
Yeah.
I know The Cure, but I couldn't think of their lyrics, if I'm being honest. But I'll have to go check that out. Yeah, I remember Boys Don't Cry. That was a famous one.
That was 1978. And then you have, you know, the love song, and then you have Friday I'm in Love, and then you had the whole Synchronicity album was phenomenal. But look, the song that I'm talking about is called Lullaby.
Okay.
And it's a very long song. The instrument is almost like a symphony orchestra. And it's okay. So okay. On cantry striped legs, the Spider-Man comes softly through the shadow of the evening sun, stealing past the windows of the blissfully dead, looking for the victim shivering in bed. So that's just it's a song
almost about like an Edgar Allan Poe type vibe.
It is. It's he wrote that. I mean, it kind of people used to think it has to do with like literally rape or child molestation, because it literally, like, if you read it, it's really freaky. But then it's not a metaphor, but allegory for his heroin addiction when he was trying to beat heroin addiction. And wow. It's ridiculous. And it's phenomenal. So go and listen to the Lullaby by The Cure. It's not one of the most famous. I mean, obviously it's one of their top 10 songs, but just the lyrics and the instrumentals on that, and just listen to that. And it's just, so anyways, The Cure, I would go, they've been together since 1978. I would love to go. I would jam out. Doesn't matter where I am.
Wow. That's awesome. I could have sworn. I think they come out here. I think they come out here in the fall. I think
if they do, I'm in Dallas.
Let's go. Let's do it. All right.
I'm in Dallas.
Everybody, yeah. You heard that. Okay.
And by the way, here's the thing. The thing about The Cure isn't just people in my age group. They encompass generations. Like, my kids love The Cure. My girlfriend loves The Cure. Like, my kids are in their early 20s. My girlfriend is in her mid-20s. So it's not like, oh, it's only for guys, my generation. They encompass people that are 10 years older than me, all the way down to like the, you know, kids that are teenagers today. So it's really cool. It's a phenomenal band. So that's the one that I would lean toward.
It's timeless. It's timeless. And it's funny. Well, last thing I'll say is, it's funny you mentioned, you know, you thought, you know, it got mixed up with NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. My wife actually is more into NSYNC, and she's like, I don't really know any of the Backstreet Boys songs. I was like, whatever, I'll go. She got really into it. And, right. And you know, and there was actually funny, a few other NSYNC fans there that really ended up getting into it as well. I don't understand why it's got to be one or the other. There's like this,
I would think,
like, why can't you just like both? But I guess
it's you would think that they would like them, because if you like one, I mean, I assume like
they get very territorial. It's almost like sports teams.
I understand the rivalry of saying who's better, but you figure if you like the music of one, you're going to like the music of the other.
And the same guy created both of them. So anyway, so point being, she was an NSYNC fan, came out liking and appreciating Backstreet Boys as well. So it was a good time, man. The Cure, I'll have to give that song a listen. And look, if they're coming here, I'm holding you to it, buddy. All right.
Oh, I'm if they're literally coming to Dallas, I'm going to spend I'm going to spend money getting the best seats in the house. So,
well, listen, because you won't have to spend money on a place to stay. All right. Well,
I appreciate it. Thank you, buddy. Hey, go and stay in Kurush's castle. 50,000 square feet, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I wish. It's a compound, actually. No. Well, hey, listen, we'll pivot here and talk about some football. The topic du jour, Shar, the big story, not a positive story, and that would be more allegations coming out against Deshaun Watson. Previously, there were 24 cases. Now a 25th and a 26th woman have come out and again claimed, you know, sexual or serial sexual predator allegations against him. They're really explicit, and they basically involve Deshaun Watson touching himself during a massage, doing things that from their point of view left them in shock and awe and almost like paralyzed on what they should do, because they were so surprised that he would do this from their account. It's come out now, Shar, 66 women over the course of 17 months that he sought out for private massage therapy sessions. What's also come out, Shar, is during that time, the Texans actually provided him hotel rooms and non-disclosure agreements to give to these masseuses. So it's not as though he was doing this under the cover of the night. It seemed like the Texans were well aware of this. I don't know if I would call it an addiction, man, but he obviously had a thing for going and seeking out women on Instagram for a massage. And so the Texans protected him by at least providing a venue and an NDA to protect their star quarterback. I'm assuming it obviously at a time where they weren't at odds, however far this goes back. This is just kind of crazy, man. It keeps getting kind of wilder. I think the Browns probably thought, this is behind us. And now it looks like there's still just blowback from this whole situation. When you hear all these things, what do you think, especially knowing now that the team was also kind of complicit in some of this stuff?
Look, at first glance, you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Why would, like, that was my reaction. Why would the Texans do this? But then I think about it, I'm like, they have a multi-million dollar investment on their hand. They know the kid's a pervert. And they're saying, how can we do this safely and in a way that keeps everybody safe, right? So did they specifically know that he's going to try to get paying for basically sex? Probably they knew it, but they can, you know, they have plausible deniability on their part, right? So they're not really liable. It just looks bad if it comes out. But it makes sense for them to say, listen, you're going to do this. This is, you know, you need this, you need this, you need this. So, and I'm certain that there's more than 66 women that he's done this with.
Who is that we know of, right?
That we know of. So let's think about this. So it's obvious he's been doing that. He was doing this in the past. And they're like, okay, well, if this is your drug of choice and, you know, your vice, it's not illegal. It's, you know, obviously, quote unquote, air quotes, you're not paying for sex. You're just getting massages, but they all know what he's doing. So something that he was doing in the past. And again, at first glance, I'm like, what the hell are they doing? But now I'm like, they're actually being pretty, they're being proactively being smart about protecting the guy, number one. Number two.
But it doesn't look good optically.
Oh, it absolutely doesn't look good. Of course it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, yeah, yes, it does not look good. But here's my question to you. So you gave a bunch of numbers. At first you said 25th and 26th women came forward. All right. Does that make it any worse now? It's like, it's, yeah, as a, I mean, oh,
what's the cutoff, right? I mean,
exactly.
Once you cross more than five, it's kind of bad, right?
My point is like, oh my God, now it's even worse. It's 25 and 26. No, it was already pretty bad.
I think the issue there, Shar, is more from the Browns perspective. They said, we did our diligence. We went through all the cases, all of the, and now more come out. It does make the Browns look kind of stupid, right? That, like, did you actually really, you know, leave no stone unturned, or did you look the other way? And because this, we already knew, Shar, the Browns never actually approached the counsel of these women. And maybe because they feel like that person's biased, right? But, like, you know, and now more have come out. It does make you kind of call into question.
Rush,
did the Browns even try to really figure out what happened?
Why would they?
Well, why would they? Because if it's true, then you wouldn't sign a rapist or a sexual.
No. He's not a rapist. Don't say that.
You wouldn't sign a sexual predator as your quarterback. That's why.
Is he really a predator or is he a pervert?
Well, Shar, I mean, if what they're saying is they got into this consensual agreement for a massage, like this, the claims are, we agreed to a massage. He forced us into having a sexual encounter.
And you think that's 100% true what they're saying?
No, what I'm saying is that you investigate it, because if it's true, how can you sign that person? That's why you investigate.
Reason being, because we all can guess that, look, the truth lies somewhere in between what Deshaun Watson is saying and what these women are saying. Correct?
I mean, maybe, but But there are times where one side is telling the full truth and the other is lying. I mean,
here's a worst case scenario. Let's say there's 66 women that have been raped. That's the worst case scenario, right?
Well, and not only that, they agreed to give him a massage and nothing more. And then they get in a situation where another being
worst case scenario is that he raped all 66, correct? That's a worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Well, all 26 that have actually come out and filed the lawsuit.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario is that all these women that have come forward were raped. That is, right. There was no murder involved. There's no battery involved, right?
That would be terrible. Right. That's worst case.
So that's on a scale of 100 being the worst. That's 100, right? And you know how I am. I set the boundaries. Best case scenario, level zero, is that Deshaun Watson paid for massages and
they're lying. They're all
lying, right? And the truth lies somewhere in the middle. It could be at 99. It could be at 15. It could be at point is we don't know.
It could be like maybe like Deshaun Watson actually sexually assaulted, raped like 15 of them, and the other 11 are bending the truth. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's also
right. Right. And in that case,
that's still really bad. Somewhere. That's still really freaking bad, right?
I understand that. My point is that the truth is lies somewhere in the middle. But here's the thing, Quraysh. I want to know how many of these people are actually certified masseuses. I want to know how many of them willing to go into a hotel room with a pro athlete, know what they're doing. I want to know how many of them that signed NDAs are like really don't know what's going on. You haven't been on the other side of it, Quraysh.
I haven't, but like you're right, and there's a lot of information we don't know, and it's not like, you know, it is it's unfortunate because it's wrong when a person's wrongfully accused of something. It's also wrong when a male athlete uses their physical strength, their position to take advantage of people. Like,
right.
What about a scenario where they think they're signing an NDA because this is just common practice with a person of Deshaun Watson's status. Agreed. And then he just took advantage of that. Well, you signed the NDA.
Agreed.
I can do whatever I want now. Right. Like
I would like to know how many of these women of the 26 were repeat masseuses for him.
That's fair, because it's like, well, if it was so bad the first
time. Right. I would like to know that. I would like to know what happened right after this. Did they go and tell the authorities? Did they go and like?
Yeah, but like, sure, that's tough, because a lot of victims of these crimes, they especially women, they do stay silent because it's they don't want to tarnish their reputation, or there's a lot of things. There's a psychological side to that that's complicated. So I don't know that.
Right. I know. I'm not saying that the ones that didn't go and file a report are lying. I'm asking a question. How many? Because for every woman that's psychologically scarred, there's going to be one that says, "Screw this. I'm gonna step forward so it doesn't happen to somebody else."
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So women are a lot stronger than society wants to give them credit for. So, you know, we always seem to focus on the fringe of like that small percentage that stays silent. And by small, I'm talking about the minority, whereas the majority or whatever it is. So look, it's a complicated issue. I don't think any of them claiming rape, they're saying sexual misconduct, right?
I think some, like there's some claims of forced, like oral.
Rape. Forced oral is rape.
Yeah. I mean, so there it is. Some of them are rape. Straight up.
Right. So let's, here's the thing. Here's what the Browns said. Browns basically said they did their due diligence. And I'm saying due diligence in air quotes, because they're saying that, look, we finally put a team together. The one thing that we haven't been able to do since our inception in 1999 is get a franchise quarterback. And we're going to look the other way. And we're going to sign him to a guaranteed contract, all right? Guess what doesn't guarantee your contract in Deshaun Watson's situation, Quraysh?
What?
If he basically breaks the rules of the NFL.
Well, that's the thing is that came up is like, well, now in light of these new allegations, do the Browns have some leeway?
The Browns have a lot of leeway. That's why they only did his first year at a minimum, because they said, look, if Deshaun Watson ends up being banned from the NFL, they don't own dick.
Yeah.
That's why they did his first year salary at only a million.
Well, and that also leads to another question, Char, is, you know, we've been talking about the potential mishandling of the Browns and the Niners with regard to Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo's situations. I don't know that I can say the Browns mishandled anymore. Maybe the Browns have more foresight than we give them credit for to say, hey, if this actually crumbles, or at the very worst, let's say Deshaun Watson gets suspended for a season and then he's fine to come back, why not have Baker? Gives us a chance to win. And if he plays well, it raises his trade value even more, right? Like, it actually seems like kind of a good idea that they kept him.
I think that was their thought process, but they didn't realize how much of a blowback that was going to have by Baker Mayfield, because no way in hell Baker Mayfield is going to play for them again.
So you think even if they say Baker, you know, come back on a 1 year.
No, he's going to say, fuck you. but I think that's
does Baker hurt his brand by doing that? Does Baker not? Because, you know, a lot of times these quarterbacks, they want to try out, right? They want it's a tryout for a team. So does he really?
Baker has nothing to gain because he can use the excuse that they ostracized me from the locker room and it's going to be hard for me to come back and play with that team.
Yeah.
And it's going to be legitimate. It's going to be legitimate. And he's going to say the lock. He said, not my actions. The actions of the Cleveland Browns made a situation where it's actually unhealthy, psychologically speaking, for me to come back to that workplace.
Yeah.
So, and here's the, and look, I'm the guy that always says, always toughen up, suck it up, go and do it. In this case, he has a right. In this case, he has a right. But I do believe that it was the reason why they held on to Baker was a combination of what you were saying. They're saying, hey, it's a little bit of insurance policy. They didn't realize how much of a backflow it was going to have. And also the fact that they wanted to get some value out of Baker.
It seems smarter than I get the Browns credit for. So that's
here's the thing. I don't think the Browns have a fiduciary obligation to check into the validity of the claims of those women, because the Browns only have a fiduciary obligation to their fan base and to their team. In terms of what I think's happened, they said more than likely it's going to be a full year suspension and he's going to come back and we're going to pay him. How many years did they pay him for? 6 years, 7 years? I don't know what it's for.
Yeah, I think it's 6 years. Yeah.
So 6 years, and they said they,
yeah, I think 6 years, $37 million guaranteed a year. No,
fully guaranteed. It's no. Fully guaranteed.
Yeah,
it's 200 and something million fully guaranteed.
Yeah, 230 guaranteed. Yep.
With the exception of $1 million, which would be this year's salary if he were to miss the season.
That's right. Yep.
Okay. So
no, I'm sorry. Again, it's 5 years, $230 million.
Okay. So basically what the Browns said, more than likely, and that's why they said we'll do a $1 million salary for this year. So they thought they're paying him 4 years, $229 million, basically, right? Or whatever it is, minus $1 million.
Right, exactly. So so if he gets past 2022, it right. becomes a 4 year,
minus one million.
Minus $1 million. So he basically makes that money. So it's $46 million a year guaranteed for
free. Right. And their thought is this: if it goes beyond a year, they're not in it. So if I was a Cleveland Browns fan, I would be like, fantastic job, front office.
Unless you lose Baker in this process.
Baker's right? done. Look, they went for it. I mean, again, yeah.
But if Deshaun is, if they cut Deshaun loose because it becomes untenable with these allegations, and now you lost Baker, now you have nothing, right? So that's the worst case.
But doesn't matter, Kurush. Next year's draft is quarterback rich.
We'll see.
So next year's draft is going to be a quarterback rich draft, and again, they were willing to not play, have a losing season this year without Deshaun. That's why they made so let's get that in solid stone. They were willing to have this be a throwaway year. Hence, we're gonna make your base salary a $1 million deal. So was Deshaun Watson. And you know what they were thinking? Guess what, Deshaun? We want the team to do bad. We want the team to do bad so we can get a whole bunch of draft choices and we can just fill young talent around you and just go for the Super Bowl, right? So if I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, I'm saying great job, Browns. And guess what's going to happen, Kurush? Let's say that Deshaun Watson gets an indefinite suspension. And let's say after 2 years, the NFL says, okay, you're ready to come back. Then the Cleveland Browns are only stuck in 2 years of this. They don't have to pay that second year. They do not have to pay that second year. They don't have to pay, you know, so they're basically stuck for $46 million a year for Baker Mayfield. So that's and let's even say that he doesn't play ever again. That's a worst case scenario, correct?
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, he never plays again. They've basically, they're out $1 million.
Yeah. No, it's not It's not,
and you telling me that's not worth risking Baker Mayfield. Look, I'm a Baker Mayfield.
I'm not a fan of Baker.
I know you're not, and but I'm more of a fan of Baker than you are, right?
For sure, you are.
Is that correct? Because again, when I defend somebody like Baker Mayfield, doesn't mean that I think he's a freaking God's gift to heaven. I'm just saying, let's not lay all the blame on Baker Mayfield. That's all I'm saying. And I'm saying, you know what? I can name 10, 15 teams that would love to have Baker Mayfield as their starting quarterback.
Yeah,
that's all I was trying to say. But I would look, there's maybe 10 quarterbacks in the NFL that I wouldn't make that risk for when it comes to Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. I do believe they have a fiduciary duty
to who?
To their fans, because it is poor, like, if these allegations are true, if the worst case scenario is true, aren't you sending a poor message?
Kurush, is the NFL team, what's his number one obligation is to win championships. Not, and while you're winning championships, you send good messages. Let's get real. Let's get beyond all this fucking kumbaya bullshit that NFL is Mr. Good Guy, you know, blah, blah, blah. NFL is designed to make billions of dollars, and the individual teams are designed to win championships.
Yeah, but they're gonna get raked through the coals from an optics.
Why? Point. Why? They have plausible deniability. Oh my God, we did a poor job doing a background check.
Well, that's not acceptable for $1 billion.
Why? Why?
How could you do it?
I mean, because we took a chance. We believed we did our background check, and we saw that, you know what? The truth lies somewhere in the middle, and nobody knows exactly where. Nobody knows exactly where. And the fact is that the money that we're offering him, if the allegations are true, he's going to be done playing football. So we're not sending any message. If the allegations are true, we're not going to pay Deshaun Watson a dime.
I don't think a lot of people are looking at it that way. I get what
you're saying. Well, then they need to get off their fucking high horse and do and look at reality. I mean, let's be honest. If Kurush, if the allegations are true, like when I said, like, the blame meter of like the 100 is the worst for every single one of them, one of these women was raped. If it's anywhere near that, if it's around 80, if there's one person that was raped, okay, if there's one person that was raped, he should never play. He should never play in the NFL again. All right, and guess what?
I mean, no? I mean, he should go to prison, do his time, and you know, and then if he served his time and paid his dues, I think.
How old is he right now? 26.
He's 27. I think
27. Yeah. Let's say that allegations are true. Trial's gonna
he turns 27 and
okay. Let's say he goes and serves 5 to 10 years in prison. You think he's gonna come back and play football?
You're a quarterback. I mean, maybe.
Kurush,
and I'm sure he can get a reduced sentence. I mean, I'm just saying. I don't think.
But I'm just letting you know. I have no interest in giving a rapist a second chance.
That's fair. I'm just saying. I think that would at least be more palatable than him totally getting away with it because of
again, we're saying if he's guilty, we don't know.
We don't know. The only problem I have when you say the truth lies somewhere in the middle is right. That in this situation, the middle is still really bad.
Right.
You know, when you have 26 allegations of sexual, you know, predatory sexual, you know, there's rape, there's all kinds. The middle is still not good.
Kurush, I didn't. No. When I said somewhere in the middle, I don't mean somewhere in the 50th percentile in terms of blame. I'm saying the truth is somewhere from zero, from 1 to 99. And that middle could be that he was just basically saying, oh, come on, like it was anywhere from like, so when I say middle, I don't mean exactly in the middle at 50. I'm talking about it's somewhere in the ether of the middle. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, like, yeah, even if you say half these women were telling the truth, that's still
even bad. if one.
Yeah,
even
I'm
if
just
one.
Saying, I'm saying half because you said I think I my no, literal again. Brain. Cut it in half, right?
No. Yeah. When I say middle, how about this? I say that the truth is somewhere in between. I shouldn't say middle. In between. Does that work better for you?
I mean, he better pray that it's on the lower in between.
Again, the Browns in my eyes, what the Browns did was absolute genius in terms of how they managed this.
If you're talking about from a purely business decision,
yes.
Okay. It was. So
there you go. Look,
but yeah. Well, I mean, this is gonna play out a couple ways. The NFL is still mum on this guy and what they're gonna do with him. I don't know what they're waiting for.
I'm telling you what they're waiting for.
By the way, the NFL doesn't care. Like, you know, there have been people who have been absolved and they still get suspended. You know, Zeke was absolved. There was no criminal charges. The investigator that the NFL actually put on the case said, there's no case here. They took her off, put someone else on. When they want to give you games, they're going to give you games. Right?
Deshaun Watson is going to be suspended for a year. Deshaun Watson is going to be suspended for a year.
I just don't get why they won't come out and say something then.
Because imagine if they come out and say he's suspended for a year and then new information shows that he actually was raping people. Now it's for 2 years. Now it's for 3 years.
So you're saying so you think the NFL is still going through information?
The NFL is going to wait until everything is finished before they lay the.
But you gotta make a call before the fall, right?
No, you don't.
Okay, so basically, if the fall rolls around, Deshaun Watson can play,
and then they can come back. But if I was Deshaun Watson, I would say, you know what? I'm going to take an early suspension, so this way the NFL can say, okay, and Lou, because again, it's a $1 million salary thing. Does he really want to take a suspension in year two? No.
If he can do that, I don't think he can just have a self-imposed suspension, right? He's got to wait for...
No, but the NFL will say, you know what? We were going to give him a year suspension and by week three, we're going to give you your suspension and we're going to say that you've already served three games. It's going to be one of those things where they're going to sentence people and they say, you know, time served while during trial. It's right. One of those things. So, and again, the NFL is not basing this off of criminality. The NFL is doing it basically off of optics. So
I think the NFL will try to make a ruling on this before the season. I think that would be smart, but I think that's going to be the goal.
The NFL doesn't
have to wait for anything legal, right? They could absolve him of everything legally. Right. They could still suspend him just for the inconvenience, right? Like, so.
Or they could come back and say indefinitely until further notice, and then end up being.
I think that's called getting put on the commissioner's exempt list, where you're just like, I think you're paid, but you're basically suspended until further notice, essentially. So.
Right, and here's the thing: his payment's only $1 million, so.
Yeah, I mean it's messy, man. It's messy. Well, his payment's only $1 million, but let's be honest, the guy got a $45 million signing bonus. I don't think he's gonna be hurting for cash, right?
No, he's not. So,
yeah, I mean, so effectively he's getting paid $46 million, even in 2022, because it's $1 million with $45 million signing bonus. So his agent found every loophole imaginable in this.
His agent did a phenomenal job. The Cleveland Browns did a phenomenal job. And if I was a fan, I'm putting myself in the shoes of the look, everybody's going to be up in arms about why is he playing? He should be in jail, except for the Browns fans. The Browns fans are going to say, no, you know how it goes. You know how it goes.
And of course, if it was Pittsburgh, right, who signed him, those same Browns fans would be saying, why are they letting this?
100%. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm sure the Browns fans didn't like it when Roethlisberger had those rape allegations.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, exactly. It's all relative. Okay, let's talk about another quarterback. Kyler Murray had made a ton of threats against his team. Social media moves, taking down all his Arizona Cardinals, you know, verbiage and images. He's at OTAs. No new contract, but they're saying they're trying to get it done and get him a new deal. I don't know. I'm not a Kyler Murray fan. I think he's a talented quarterback, but I don't think he's the kind of quarterback that can really command like this Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes type of money. And so this situation bothers me. Like, I think, sure, he should get paid what he's worth. I just think typically these guys think they're worth a lot more than they are. And he doesn't come off as a leader to me. He always looks kind of pissed off and frustrated on the sidelines. He's not, he's a short guy. He's quick, but he struggles to see over the linemen. And look, his legs make him dangerous. What happened with RG3? And I'm not saying they're the same quarterback, but those kind of guys, what happens when he loses that half step quickness? He just becomes another short pocket passer. I'm not a fan of Kyler on multiple fronts. I think he should be counting his lucky stars that the Cardinals want to get something done and keep him around. But if he's asking for that top 2-3 quarterback money, peace, man. I'm not seeing it. But what do you make of Kyler Murray in this whole situation, man?
Where do I start with this? Like there's so much to say from so many different angles. Shit that bothers me. It's like, where the fuck do I start?
Wait, bothers you like about my opinion or just the situation itself?
No, Kyler Murray.
Okay. Fair enough.
No, your opinion is spot on, and I don't like it when you and I agree. I don't like it when you and I agree because then it's okay. No. Because
listening, you and I didn't talk about Kyler Murray in the
press. At all.
So I didn't know you were gonna feel this way.
For those that listen, Kurush and I decided maybe it was the middle of our first year of doing this podcast that our opinions needed to be kept secret because it made things a lot more bland when we talked about it in the show, because we had already yelled at each other in the production meeting. By the time we got to the recording, people were like, you know, what's going on? We don't want to yell at each other anymore. So hence we literally say what we're going to talk about and we don't disclose to each other what our thought processes behind it are, right? That's how we do it. Okay, so let's start with this. Last year, when everybody was calling the Arizona Cardinals the greatest team in the history of the NFL, and that every single one of those players should be in the Hall of Fame, and that Kyler Murray is the greatest quarterback since John Elway, what was I saying when they were 7-0, Kurush?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of hyperbole there, but yes, you were never on the Cardinals bandwagon. Okay.
And I recall one time you asked me, what is it about the Cardinals that makes you say that they weren't even the best team in their own division? Do you remember when the Rams were?
I'm not a Kyler Murray fan, but I did think you were hating a little bit more.
Right, because I'm a Rams fan.
Exactly. Okay. That was it. Yeah.
Right. And remember how I told you, how can I call them the best team in the NFL when they're not even the best team in the NFC and they're not the best team in the NFC West? I remember saying this and you were like, you're out of your mind, you know,
I think, Bashar, we did both agree that the power rankings are lazy and just looking at their undefeated record and saying,
absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So
absolutely. And no. And to your credit, 100% that you agreed with me. The only team that we differed on is I thought the Cowboys were better than them. And you're like, I don't know if I like my Cowboys better than Cardinals.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, the Cowboys and the Rams. I had the Cowboys and the Rams above Arizona, and you had the Cowboys and the Rams below Arizona. I think it was a matter of something like that, right? So anyways, look, we weren't really differing that much in our observation of the Cardinals, but one time you asked me, what is it about the Cardinals that you don't like? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think I asked you multiple times.
Right, and I said, it's the quarterback. Do you remember that? I said, he's just not and I couldn't put a finger on it.
It's the it factor.
Yes. And I said, I just don't like it. I don't think he's going to make it through the season. I don't like, there's a whole slew of things. Here's the thing. Those that are listening, I look at a lot of the information that I get isn't from while people are playing. It's from people on the sideline and their interactions, because that's something that gets talked about very little. And that's something that I can see. For example, if the offensive line always sits together, always the offensive line sits together on a bench. If all of a sudden I see the left guard and left tackle on opposite sides, or one of those guys is missing from that, I start thinking, what's going on? I start looking into it. So there's things that I see that I notice on the sideline with Kyler Murray that I didn't like. The kind of looks, it seemed like he would roll his eyes a lot. It seemed like he was very dismissive a lot. I just didn't like it.
It was never good. Like, the teammates were never good enough.
I don't even know. I don't even, maybe what the coach was saying to him was like, wasn't good enough or whatever it was, because I would see him rolling his eyes and I would kind of look up into the sky like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Like I'm a Valley girl. Yeah. You understand what I mean? So I've never liked Kyler Murray. Now, I can't deny his talent in today's game. All right. Because the quarterback is protected. I can't deny how explosive he is. And look, he's got a freaking cannon of arm. He's got, I don't know if people know this or not, he's got a really, really strong arm, all right? It just, like you said, he's short, he's small, and he's got an attitude. So here's my thought. He's not the type of player that deserves Patrick Mahomes money, Deshaun Watson money, Aaron Rodgers money. Like, he's not, because he's not the type of player that can consistently win football games throughout 16 games in the season and four playoffs games or three playoff games. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have that it factor. So for him to want to be paid top five quarterback money, you're out of your freaking mind. You're out of your freaking mind.
And then honestly, the numbers really don't even support it. If you look at the back half of Kyler Murray's, like, every season, he doesn't play well in the second half of the season. Like, he starts hot and then it just slowly begins to evaporate in terms of his productivity. So, like, he hasn't proven he can win. Like, they rode that initial, whatever it was, that
7-0
record, you know, and barely, they won. I think they won how many, you know, I think they won like 10 or 11 games, 10 games last year. Right. So they really didn't play well down the stretch. I think Kyler Murray only threw for 300 yards one time in the Cardinals' final 14 games. I mean, that's not very good, especially in today's passing lane. Like, how do you have one 300 yard game in the final you know, 13, 14 start? It's just, he tapers off. And I think that with his height, with the fact that I look at as he ages as a player, he's going to get less quick. His legs are going to be an asset to him anymore. He's not the kind of guy that I want to pay a ton of money long-term to. I just, no hate. He's an incredible athlete. He's electric. He's fun to watch. I don't think his style of play is scalable as a franchise quarterback. And so he should get paid more than rookie contract. No question about it.
Of course. Does Baker Mayfield. So should Baker Mayfield.
Right, right. But it's relative. It should be relative to what they're actually capable of.
Look, and here's a question I have. What is the deal with players almost filing for divorce on social media from their team when they're happy?
It's a millennial thing, dude. It's like,
I don't get it. I don't. And here's the thing. It's not just a millennial thing. I see some people my age, some of my friends, that on their Facebook and Instagram and the, you know, when they used to be status, happily married, divorced. Like, I don't understand why people disclose their personal lives on social media.
Because they want to win the court of public opinion.
No, but I'm talking about normal people like you and I. Like, oh my God, I just broke up, had the worst day. Oh my God,
because they want the public opinion of their network to feel better.
Okay, my girlfriend and I, the lovely Angelina, her and I have been dating for over 6 years now, which is a personal record, by the way. Do you know that
you're saying 6 years with someone is a record for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Before that, it was 18 months. So, and I've kept the same car. I've kept the same car for 6 years. So 6-7 years, which is crazy. I mean, I keep.
No, so what would you, were you switching cars every time you broke up with somebody?
Literally, like it was like 3 to 6 months after I would break up, I would get a new car.
What a trend, man. Yeah, wow. Okay.
Anyways.
Either you like the car or you like the girl. I'm guessing right. The girl.
Both. No, because I bought three different cars since then, and I still kept that same car too. So perfect. Anyways, the idea that you go on social media and delete, and look, Deebo Samuels did this, a couple of other players did this. What are you doing? You're looking so immature and so idiotic to me that it's a turnoff. It's a freaking turnoff to me. Like, what are you doing?
Well, they want to scare the team into giving them more money or showing them more respect or trading them or doing something that they want them to do.
I don't know. I just shake my freaking head. It's stupid. It's freaking stupid. I don't get it. It's absolutely stupid.
And the funny thing is, he actually now, he's at OTAs. He denied that he did that as a negative thing towards the Cardinals. Isn't that ridiculous?
Then why the hell did you do it?
I know. It's like, come on, man. Like, that's at least own it, right? I'd have more respect if he was like, you know what? Yeah, it was emotional. Yes, I was upset at the prospects of my contract at the time. I'm in a better place now. But yeah, I did it at the time out of frustration, and I regret it. Like that, I have a ton of respect for that. But to just deny that it had anything to do with his dissatisfaction with the Cardinals is just like, come on, man. Like I wasn't born yesterday. You know,
Does that shock you? Just the same person that turns around and does that on social media, I would be shocked if they turn around and do something mature. They've already done something immature by, I mean, come on.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and look, I don't want this to be a Kyler Murray bashing session. The guy is a super electric, talented player.
Yes.
He presents a lot of difficult scenarios and challenges for opposing defenses. He's an asset. And there's no question about it, right? I just don't view him as a guy I would, you know, break the checkbook open for, like a Mahomes, like a Watson, like even a Russell Wilson, if I'm being honest, who's proven that despite him not being as tall, he's still able to play big. I haven't seen that from Kyler Murray, right? So it's just something to say he should get what he's worth. He shouldn't be pouting over it. And I think he just needs to improve his body language and his leadership with his team, you know, and he'd be more likable to the outside world, which doesn't really matter, like likability. But I think if you see it that you're saying, hey, he's got constant negative body language, you know, I see it too. There's probably something more to that, right? So those are the kind of things that kind of irk me. I would love to see him play well. I would honestly be happy if you proved me wrong and change his demeanor, change his ability to see over defenses and play bigger, change the fact that he's fallen off, actually plays consistently throughout the course of an entire season and plays better at the end than he does. Like all those things, I'm rooting for human beings to do well, right? But I'm making observations based on what I've seen of Murray so far. And if I'm going to assume that this same trend that's taken place the first 3 years of his career continues to happen, he doesn't deserve the top five money. That's really all I'm saying. It's not hate.
He's not a top five quarterback. If he was in the AFC West, he wouldn't even be a starter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's who would he start over in the AFC West?
That's fair. Maybe Derek Carr, but yeah. Maybe. Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah.
Do the numbers support that?
It just depends what you want in a quarterback.
Yeah, okay, agree. But you see what I mean. So if literally I can come and arguably, with a good argument, tell you that he wouldn't even be a starter in one division, does he deserve top three quarterback money in the NFL? Are you kidding me? I just named four teams.
Yeah.
Okay, three teams, whatever.
Right.
Kurosh, there are 10 teams that would keep their own quarterbacks over Kyler Murray.
I agree.
And so how can you ask for – look, I understand if you're top 10 and you're asking top 7 money or top 6 money. I understand that. But if you're top 10, top 12, and you're asking top 3 money, come on, there's a disconnect here. Get real.
Major disconnect. So it seems like based on the fact that he's there, that he's being a little bit more forthright and positive, that there's confidence the deal is going to get done. I'm sure the Cardinals are going to figure this out and get him a deal done in the offseason here before the season begins. I just hope he doesn't rake him through the coals, which very well may happen. So we'll see who ends up kind of winning this negotiation in terms of, is it a team-friendly deal? Does it enable them to go out and get a competitive team around him? Or is he going to just play hardball till they give him what he wants, and it's going to compromise the team's ability to actually give him money? And again, like with the Mahomes, $50 million a year, you do it because he can cover up a lot of other deficiencies, right? You don't have to go and have pressure to go fill so many of the areas, because Mahomes is worth, he's talking about force multiplier. So Kyler is not that. So I'm intrigued to see how this plays out with him and where they ended up landing in terms of cap hit and overall numbers, but he's back. And we'll kind of see where this goes and where the negotiations.
And here's one thing I got to say is I have a feeling the reason why the Cardinals overpaid for Hollywood Brown is to appease Kyler.
Oh, you have a feeling? Absolutely. They were trying to do it as an act of good faith. Say, hey, we do love you, man. It's like they're almost just, they're kind of like the person who has more control in the relationship, right? Like they,
I mean,
just look their way and say, see, we do love you. Do you believe us? You know,
for the next 2 years, I will take Amari Cooper over Hollywood Brown.
Oh, easy. Hollywood Brown's a weapon. You know, he's a bit of a one trick pony in terms of just being a speed guy.
Right.
But
he's basically Kyler Murray at the wide receiver position. he's a small, tiny little guy.
No, but look, I mean, assuming if they get an AJ Green back, right, who still can be pretty valuable, DeAndre Hopkins is suspended for the first 6 games of the season, so that's kind of a bummer. But assuming they have, like, you know, a healthy receiving core with DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, and Hollywood Brown, you know, that's a decent core of guys to build around and give Murray some weapons. So they've definitely, I think, done their part in putting good weapons around him. I don't know. And they got Zach Ertz last year. I mean, like, I just don't, what's he crying about? Like, they're invested in his success.
And didn't they just draft a really good tight end or get a, I think they drafted a really good tight end that early, like his second or third round. Also, they have James Conner at running back who was pro, you know, playing fantastic. Look, yeah,
you're right. No, they took Trey McBride out of Colorado with the first pick they had in the draft.
So, okay, there you go. Even better.
I don't think it was a first round pick, but it was the first pick that they actually had.
I got you.
So, they still got Ertz, and their second round.
And pick. They just signed Ertz to a new deal. So it's not like they're getting a replacement for Ertz. They literally, look, a quarterback's best friend when they're in trouble is a tight end.
Yeah.
It's plain and simple. So
I think the point we're trying to make is the Cardinals, I think,
are doing their best
a lot to show gratitude and appreciation and wanting to help out.
Right. And look, most of the time people say, I just want to feel appreciated. Kyler Murray needs to feel appreciated and respected. Plain and simple.
And again, I'm curious to see where these numbers land. We'll see. I'm sure we'll get done this summer and we'll have something to talk about there. Speaking of deals, Shar, a while back it was reported kind of in more of a hearsay rumor type way that it was a done deal, Brady and Sean Payton, the Dolphins, right, was something that was going on. Now the story's gotten more legs, multiple sources not confirming this, that it was absolutely a done deal that Tom Brady and Sean Payton were going to go to Miami together, which is, when you think about it, it's kind of crazy that it's almost like they conspired, because we were talking about the production meeting. The Dolphins fired Brian Flores on January 10th, pretty much the start of the playoffs, a month before the Super Bowl. You know, I wonder, assuming this is all true, did Tom Brady and Sean Payton make this plan even before that time and say, you know, we're both going to retire at the end of the year. We're both going to make it seem like we're riding off into the sunset. And then we're going to come back and find this loophole and have Miami offer their trade capital or whatever to get to acquire both their services. It just seems like, man, that's crazy. And then the other part of that too is, does that affect at all Tom Brady's just standing? I know it's crazy to say, but is standing in the locker room in terms of like his teammates feeling maybe like, oh, so you're here, but this is what's in your first choice. Does that have a potential to have negative impact on his teammates in the locker room? You know, what do you make of this, assuming all this was true and that they actually were kind of scheming on the background to make this happen and have him go to Miami?
Kurush, it stinks. It absolutely stinks. And I'm just putting myself, let's say I was a starting lineman for Tom Brady and I had heard this. And you know me, I say what's on my mind, and I would have probably gone to him in a joking way, said, oh God, you know, I'm got to be number two. But you know, I would make sure that he knows that I know, and then I would bury the hatchet. And I would say, well, you know what, let's go win a championship.
Okay, so it's not like a professional. It's not like irreparable. But it rubs you the wrong way a little bit.
Yes, it would hurt my feelings. But then again, it's like, you know what? Thank you for coming back. It's like, come on. It's one of those feelings. It's like, you know, you're dating this hot girl in high school, and you know you're not her first choice, but you're just happy to have her anyways. It's one of those things. So yeah, It's enough to kind of look sideways, but not enough to ruin anything because still want to win a championship.
Well, because it's funny because, like, you know, even Leonard Fournette was quoted as saying that him and Tom Brady were talking coming off the field when their comeback against the Rams fell just short in that divisional playoff game. And they were talking about how they can't go out this way. It's like, wait a minute, you're saying that, but you're in your mind, I'm retiring, you're going to go to Miami. So, you know what I mean? It's just like little things like that are like, really, dude, you know, but at the same time, few people hold as much cachet as Tom Brady does, right? Like, I feel like if it's one guy you're going to forgive for that, it's going to be a guy like Tom Brady, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. And winning cures all. Winning cures all. Look, I was in a locker room where there was a guy, I'm not going to say what team, and I'm not going to say who the guy was. He and I hated each other to the point where, like, literally, if one of us would say one word to the other in locker room, we were ready to jump each other. and just beat the crap out of each other, right? I remember after a great play, what, I know this guy.
I haven't heard of this guy before.
I doubt it. No. Okay. It's a backup defensive lineman.
Okay.
That played.
You guys just had it out in practice.
Just didn't like each other. Did not like each other. And there was a play made, and I found myself hugging him on the sideline. You know, so it's and then we look at each other like, it doesn't matter. And we're kind of like, you know, and right. Then we go back to hating each. Nothing. Winning cures everything. It does. And who's the greatest winner in the history of humanity? It's Tom Brady. So
This is true. And I actually, you know, and to be fair, I mean, let's be honest. It would have been pretty cool to see a mastermind like Sean Payton work with Tom.
Yes.
That would have been, I'm almost like, man, it's kind of a bummer we didn't get to see that. But at the same time, I do think that Miami got a hell of a coach in Mike McDaniel. They got Tyreek Hill. I think this is going to make Tua massively improve. They've got a good quarter build run. I don't think it's like, if I'm Miami, you know, I don't know that I'm like, oh, bummer, right? Necessarily. I think they still have a lot of potential to build off of. But it's just from as a fan standpoint, you know, you're putting a future Hall of Fame coach with a future Hall of Fame quarterback together at this point in their career. It would be kind of a cool thing to be able to see. Who knows what will happen? I think actually in an interview on the Dan Patrick show yesterday or 2 days ago, Tom Brady did say he sees his desire to compete and win kind of decreasing over the next couple of years. So he's even starting to admit that a little bit. So that was probably his last hurrah, maybe to go somewhere else besides Tampa potentially, but we'll see. I mean, who knows if Tua bombs and flames out this year, maybe there is a path for Tom Brady to still get to Miami, albeit without Sean Payton. But
I would have liked to see Sean Payton and Tom Brady together.
As a fan, it's cool. It's like saying, you know, it would have been cool to watch, I don't know, like Bill Parcells coach John Elway or something. Like, you know, it's just two guys, you know, are future Hall of Famers who are masterminds. You don't get to see those type of people join forces. And it also would be cool to see him with an offensive minded coach. He did have Bruce Arians, but like we kind of know that Tom Brady just kind of took his offense and planted it there. So to see the genius of Sean Payton, I feel like Sean Payton would be a lot more collaborative with Tom Brady. So anyway, it was kind of a pipe dream to think about. I still think Miami's in a great position, but we'll see. I mean, I don't think after this year, Tom Brady's a free agent again. So I think he can do what he wants after this coming year. I mean, it's gonna be crazy. Is he going to play again at 46 years old? You know,
it all depends on how he feels after this season and how his body's reacting. The one last thing about this whole Miami thing, and look,
it hasn't been a big story. I'm a little bit perplexed that this story hasn't really picked up steam. This is a huge deal, and no one really talked about it much.
Yeah, anyway. But people are talking about Deshaun Watson. That's why, because that's even a bigger story.
That's fair. That's fair.
I mean, you know, so you only have one front page to the newspaper, as the old saying goes. So look. And I'm going to say this for the last time. This is why when Brian Flores said that it was racism that got him fired, I said it was absolute bullshit. It was Tom Brady and Sean, the idea of Tom Brady and Sean Payton that got him fired.
So do you think what you're theorizing, Char, is interesting. What you're saying is it's not that Miami was done with Brian Flores no matter what. And then after they fired him, this came about. You're saying no. They actually might have kept Brian Flores, but the prospect of adding Brady and Payton came into light, and they just made a move.
Planning
all this.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Because
if it's just about wins and losses, you know, Flores did a good job.
Flores is a good coach, you know. But if Brady would have taken a week and then retired, then I would have said, hey, I think something's brewing. You know what I mean? It had nothing to do with Flores. I have a feeling that they were talking about this because for Brady to come out right after the game and say he's retiring, it makes me think that. I mean, look, a week before, Tom Brady lost in week one of the playoffs, right? Week two. Okay, so 2 weeks after Flores gets fired, Tom Brady immediately retires. That's two. That's only 14 days. That's too small of a time for him to decide all of a sudden, because Tom Brady retired wanting to go to Miami, right?
That's the implication. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be far-fetched at this point, I guess, okay. right? But the question is, like, let's say he won the Super Bowl with the Buccaneers, right? You know, like, you know, would he have then retired and gone to Miami then?
Maybe, who knows? So anyway, that's just another instance where I say, look, there's somebody crying wolf of, you know, for racism. So it just makes me sick. Anyways.
It doesn't exist in the league.
Of course it exists.
But the question is, was this particular situation rooted in racism? And by the way, let's end on this. It's a good segue. I texted you about this a couple weeks ago, and I want to play this clip for our listeners and get your take on it. So LeSean McCoy recently went on a show called the I Am Athlete podcast. And I don't know how it came up, but he started talking about Eric Bieniemy. And he had a point of view, having played under Eric Bieniemy with the Chiefs, as to why Bieniemy has not gotten a head coaching position. I want to play this and then have us talk about it. So
also let him know that that this tweet has been deleted. Luckily, we had saved it, or Kurosh had saved it. So audio quality isn't very good. So just bear with us on this.
Here you go.
And the reason why I finished is because me and Aquarius, we had a difference about different things, right? And I'm going to say this. It's the reason why every year they keep hyping up to get a coaching job, a head coach or office coordinator job or anywhere else, and you don't get one because he's talking about Eric Bieniemy. Yeah, and the players.
You bring this up now. We got a minute or so.
Some players, right? He talks to a certain way, and some players will take it. I wouldn't take it. Like, whoa. You know, that's some question I would ask. Everybody's accountable. Yeah. That's why it's not, because he's a black coach. That's not the reason. Reason that, because he, I won't get into that, but I'll say this.
Okay, you didn't say the reason.
Yeah, that's cut. It's cutting out now, Kurosh. So we got the gist of it.
So basically, what he's saying is that he would treat players a certain way and talk to them a certain way, and that McCoy didn't appreciate the disrespect. And what he implied, Char, is that this reputation got around about him. And so perhaps other players maybe didn't want to play for Eric Bieniemy around the league. And this kind of got out and perhaps played a role in him not getting a head coaching position. Obviously, we also know, just in case some people don't know, for whatever reason, LeSean McCoy is black. It's not a white guy saying this, right? It is a black player. So, you know, I think people might look at that and say it has more credence because it's at least coming from a fellow black player who's not going to maybe have racist tendencies, so to speak. What did you make of those comments
Can I say something, Char?
Only question there is, isn't every coach a hard ass? Isn't every coach gonna talk down to you? I don't know what he could be talking about that's so bad. That's different than a typical NFL coach.
I'm not saying what he's saying is correct. Okay, we had this conversation and you and I got into it. And I said, I hate the fact that our default reason why a certain player does or a certain coach doesn't get hired, it has to be race. To me, racism is one of the dirtiest things you can be. And to me, before you can blame somebody as being racist, you better have exhausted all other reasons why. All right? You don't just go around saying racism, 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 because you know what? Racism does occur. Racism is alive. And when everybody screams freaking racism at every corner, it lessens it for when it actually really happens, Kurosh. This
like
is
the
why.
Boy who cried wolf.
Yes, this is why. So to the point where I hear somebody cry, oh, it's because of racism. I'm like, in my head, get the fuck out of here. I've heard it so many times, I'm tired of it. Get the fuck out of here. To where some, and you know what? It does occur. It does happen. People are racist. And you and I had this conversation and I said, could it be because Eric Bieniemy is this? Could it? And we were going back and forth. I love being vindicated because thank you, LeSean McCoy, for coming out and saying what I've said. There is no way that a general manager who's looking to win, even let's say if he has less than stellar thoughts on black people, is not going to hire the best candidate. There is no fucking way. Because at the end of the day, he wants to win. He wants to have a positive.
Right, but at the same time, if you have multiple candidates that are fairly similar,
right,
you're going to hire the one that, and if you have a racial bias in that situation, you know, unless the black candidate is that much better, head and shoulders above the rest, where it's a slam dunk, it's stupid if you don't, right? And I'm just saying that might.
And here's the thing. And here's the thing. Why shouldn't somebody hire somebody if all other things are equal, somebody that he's more comfortable with?
Right, the answer to that question would be, Shar, is that if you're more comfortable with white people, and 99% of the owners are white outside of Shad Khan, then that does create a scenario where you're going to have qualified.
But then you're saying 99% of the people are racist. I'm not saying that.
No. So, but for those owners, right, basically, like, black candidates would have it wouldn't be an equal playing field for black candidates.
Nothing is ever an equal playing field. Okay.
It would be vastly skewed.
No, I disagree. It's not vast, because now you're going, if that small, first you have to get a person
but if you're asking me personally, I don't know that I have faith that NFL owners have super progressive views.
If they don't, then they're going to fail, because then they're going to get rid of, look, the market adjusts itself. If somebody is hiring, not based on skill, rather based on race, either way, whether you're trying to be a progressive and try to even out the playing field, or if you're the opposite of the way around, you're a retard and you have racist beliefs, you're hurting yourself at the end of the day.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, if the majority of NFL owners are more comfortable hiring white candidates, okay, then that's going to lead to the majority of white candidates getting those jobs. That's just the fact of the matter, which means.
Yeah, but you're saying you're assuming that the majority of people have those beliefs, that the majority of people are uncomfortable hiring black people.
But I would also say, I personally feel that way. But when I say that, I don't mean that it's like this super like intentional siege campaign against black candidates. I actually think for a lot of people, it's subconscious bias, right? But at the end of the day, I'm still going to take one more. It's not because I hate the black guy because he's black, but it's because I am just more comfortable with somebody who looks like me, talks like me.
Yeah.
I'm going to subconsciously feel more inclined to that person. I'm not saying that it's blatant, you know, unadulterated racism. Right. But it plays a part. It plays a part. That's all I'm saying. It plays a part,
okay,
which makes it difficult.
You know what plays...
And I'm not saying Bieniemy is a victim. Like, if what McCoy is saying is true, then obviously it's not as simple as just a race thing, right?
It's not. It never is. Kourosh, I've told you, I've seen it work the opposite way. Black people have such a huge advantage of making it to the NFL that it's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. It's the same gym mentality where you're playing pickup basketball and you see a tall, fit-looking black guy come in and a tall, fit-looking white guy, you're going to pick the black guy to go on your... It's the same mentality that works in the state.
I don't know about that. If they're both tall and athletic...
Kourosh, automatically the black guy looks more athletic to all of us.
Didn't you say Nick Foles is a good basketball player?
Yes, he is. And look, you have a hard time believing, because you wouldn't pick Nick Foles first in a group, would you? Right?
Well, now that you told me that, maybe...
Okay, no, but beforehand, you wouldn't have. All right, so there you go. Well, Kourosh, I saw it happen. I saw it happen in my own eyes. I saw it happen where they, like, when I beat in one of the athletic drills, when I beat our first round draft choice with the Redskins on a shuffle drill, and people were betting money, people were like, what? The general manager came in and asked me to run it again.
Well, that guy was a first round pick, though, too. I don't think it's because he was black. He was a first round pick, regardless of his color of his skin.
Kourosh, they already had his measurements.
Okay. Oh, well,
they already had his measure.
Sure. Let's go back to McCoy. Why do you think McCoy made these comments and pretty much like went after his former coach?
He's got an axe to grind, or he doesn't give a shit.
And that goes back to my first question then.
Right.
All NFL coaches are tough on players, right?
Well, I don't think he said that he was tough.
Russ Grimm and So what do you think? What did Bienemy do? And McCoy's been around the league, right? He's been around for a while, right? So it's not like this guy hasn't had a lot of coaches and people that he's reported to from a coaching standpoint. So what do you think? What was it that Bienemy did or whatever his style was that really caused him to have this axe to grind, as you said?
What Bienemy is saying is not that – I'm sorry, McCoy is saying is not that Bienemy was tough. He's saying, you know, we don't mind tough. We like tough and fair, right? In fact, we prefer tough and fair versus not tough and unfair. Or, you know, we want tough coaching. We need tough coaching, all right? I think the axe that McCoy has to grind is saying that he plays favorites.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, yeah. And he was saying like he treats people a certain way. Some players put up with it. Other players didn't put up with it. Right. So it feels maybe like it's a respect thing, but yeah. So I don't know enough about the player coach dynamics.
And again, I'm not saying that McCoy is correct, but he got the impression and look, my kids are playing and my Julian now decided to stop playing football after 6 concussions, so I can say this. He literally told me that his black head coach at this certain school, you better be black or you're not gonna get second look.
Are you not gonna get what?
Or you're not gonna get a second look. You better be so far and above anybody else that you're not gonna get a second look. You think it doesn't happen? It happens all the time.
You can't say that out loud. I'm not saying you. So I meant as a coach, you can't.
He's not gonna say it out loud. It's just the way he is.
Oh, you're saying that's what the implication he got, that if unless you're black, you're not gonna get a second look.
And you know what? One of his teammates that's not white that was in my dining room table. He goes, yeah, he's right. Okay, so again, my point is this. Shit happens. And you know what? That coach is going to hurt because he's not going to play the best players. All right? The point is this. Let's not put – okay, first of all, let's go to the Shady McCoy thing. Shady might be right or wrong, but what he's saying is that the word out there on Bienemy is that he doesn't have good personal relations and player relation capacity to be a head coach. And as a head coach, you need that.
And do you believe that reputation could prevent him from getting all these jobs that he's going to
do? It absolutely would. Yeah.
Because the players talk and it gets
back. Players talk and it gets out. And the worst thing you can do is as a head coach, say you're not playing the best players out there. If you lose the locker room because you're not playing the best players, you're done. There is absolute confidence in you as a head coach.
I mean, but the guy is overseen. An incredible offense. Now, I get it. He's
and
got
has he, has, and again, yeah. this is the argument we had, or was it Andy Reid?
Yeah, but I mean, and the other, I mean, the counter argument to that would be sure, but Andy Reid has had other ones of his disciples go on and get head coaching jobs. But at the same time, maybe those guys didn't have this reputation that McCoy.
Who was Andy Reid's last offensive coordinator? Do we remember?
It was the guy in Chicago, Matt Nagy.
Matt Nagy. How well did he do?
Say what?
How well did he do?
He did. He was not very good. I mean, I think he had a good first year, but then he wasn't very good.
Right. Right. So my point is this, and just because somebody is a good offensive coordinator doesn't mean that they're going to be a head coach. It takes more.
Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl, right? I think what's his name? Frank Reich was on Andy Reid's staff at one point. It's not like these guys are pretty good coaches most of the time, right? So.
Right, but they have to have good skills in terms of winning the locker room.
So even if Bienemy was a great offensive play call, let's say it wasn't Andy Reid and it was really Bienemy,
right?
Like the fact that he has his reputation still doesn't help him as head coach candidate.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah,
North Turner was the greatest offensive coordinator that I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, and you know what? And he wasn't that bad of a head coach. He just wasn't a strong head coach. We just didn't believe in him.
Yeah, and then Norv is a great example of a guy who's a lifelong coordinator, phenomenal coordinator.
Phenomenal.
Not a great head coach. I think like Wade Phillips is another one.
Wade Phillips, there you go.
Yeah, great.
And look,
coordinator.
Norv wasn't a bad head coach. I'm not saying that Norv was a bad head coach. I like Norv a lot. Norv a lot, and he's probably the greatest offensive brain that I've ever encountered.
Yeah. All right. Look, I mean, who Troy Aikman has straight up said, I don't win Super Bowls without Northrup. That's the guy that I irreplaceable. So yeah. Bush,
when we were ahead by 7 points or more, I've never seen better play calling in my life. I would be like, oh my God, this is what he was doing. Like last series when we did this, this is what he was setting it up for. I'm like, holy shit, this guy's a fucking genius.
Yeah.
God forbid we fall behind by 10 points or more.
Because then
and again, these are things,
a little fire.
This is these are the things. And you know what Norv would do? Norv would try to get all 10 points back within two series instead of trying to grind. You know, that's right. And again, that was his biggest fault. The guy was a good head coach. He just tried to get everything back immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He would go to a two minute offense with like 2.5 quarters left.
The point, but here's what I'll say though. Here's the example though, right? Is Norv Turner, Wade Phillips, these kind of, you've seen guys like this who are, we know are more suited to be a coordinator than a head coach, have still gotten multiple head coaching opportunities. But again, right. You could turn around and say, well, yeah, because that's because they were still good locker room guys. Like they had the
respect. They were good locker room guys.
Whereas if the enemy, if McCoy's right and he has a reputation, then that's a deal breaker.
Yes. Can I? I wonder if I can disclose this. It's 22 years ago.
If
fuck it. Fuck it.
I can edit it out if we need to.
Okay. So the year is 2000. Charlie Casserly, the former general manager of the Washington Redskins, is out of a job. All right. The general manager for the Steelers was fired. Remember Tom Donahoe, the one that really liked me, and he ended up leaving.
Yeah.
So we had an interim general manager. I believe it was sometime during the 2000 season. The Steelers were looking at hiring Charlie Casserly as a general manager. Do you know that I was interviewed by the Rooneys and Coach Cower for a good hour and a half about Charlie Casserly?
Oh, because you were there in Washington when he was there. Okay. Okay.
And again, that's
them doing their diligence.
Yes. Yes, and I wasn't the only one. There was other players that Charlie Casserly was involved with.
So you're saying that was happening, but 22 years, like the
and they ended up hiring Kevin Gilbride instead of Charlie Casserly, who, by the way, just recently retired. So,
yeah, and okay, yeah. So the moral of the story is, teams will do their research deep and wide on.
And by the way, just for the record, I gave great. Like I talked Charlie Casserly up to a storm. Goes to show you how little they paid attention to what I was saying.
He checks out as a good candidate, right? It doesn't mean again, other factors.
My point is this: all it takes is a couple of negative things about a head coach. Now, general manager less so, because the general manager doesn't deal with the team, with the players. The general man, it's never said, oh, the general manager lost the locker. It's the coach lost the locker.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you're Bill Belichick and you got both, right?
Right. Right. So, right. But no, the point is this, all it takes is a handful of people.
Yeah.
Telling their that, oh no, no, hell no. I don't want to play for this guy.
Yeah. 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 That's fair. And I mean, I don't want it to be racism with Eric Bieniemy. Like, I was almost like relieved to hear that. Because at least it's something tangible that isn't like.
All I'm asking is, can we please exhaust all other reasons prior to jumping to racism? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and obviously there's this lawsuit with Flores, and I think a couple other coaches have jumped on that.
And here we go with Flores. So like to me, if somebody's truly saying, I'm not going to hire this so-and-so because he's Black. I'm not going to hire this so-and-so because he's Mexican. To me, racism is a lot worse than to most people. Right, so that's what I'm saying. Don't accuse somebody of racism before you have all the facts.
But sure, all I'll say to that is racism isn't always as straightforward as the example, right? You could have, subconscious racism, right? That creeps in your decision-making without you necessarily having an intention to not hire somebody because of their skin color, their ethnicity, their background, whatever their views, like it could creep up in ways that are not as in your face and literal as you're talking about. And I think it's still a problem because it creates lack of opportunity.
It's a problem that's going to get solved with time and has gotten solved with time, and the needle is way pointing to the right direction. And I think we're going to create more racial relations issues. We're going to create more racial relation issues by at every turn saying racism, 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 racism.
Well, here's the thing. I wonder if Bieniemy's situation, like, does Bieniemy think it's racism? Maybe he doesn't even think it's racism, right? If Bieniemy felt that way, maybe he'd jump on that Flores lawsuit. I don't know.
And here's the thing, to me, to have Tom Flores say it's racism that they did this, it's such a fucking lazy cheap shot to take.
Wait. So sorry, you cut out there. You said to say Brian Flores, say what?
For Brian Flores to scream out racism because he got fired is the biggest, laziest garbage move that I've seen in my life, because your general manager is a black man. Your this ownership that supposedly is racist has hired a general manager and a black head coach. Don't tell me racism.
I think Brian Flores, if what he's saying is true, he was put in an uncompromising situation with being told to attend games and being told to attend an unauthorized, illegally meeting with like Tom Brady when it was out of compliance. He was put in bad situations right now. Was that rooted in racism? I don't know enough about the case.
No, it's not. It's not racism. Yeah,
it's possible that he was just like the owner just treated him like crap or that put him in a bad situation.
It's not racism when somebody tells you to tank games. How's that racism?
Yeah, look, I don't know the full scope of his.
No, I'm just in a vacuum.
That in a vacuum, right? Like that in a vacuum is not racism.
And now we're seeing smoke, and where there's smoke, there's fire. Idea of Sean Payton, Tom Brady in Miami. Is that because they're racist, Kurosh, or is that because they're smart? Or at least not smart, or is that because they're thinking football?
Yeah, I mean, it's
especially
possible.
Especially with the fact that Tom Flores is not a likable person. Tom Flores is an asshole.
Well, right. And it's kind of like that was the report that came out that he just, but the thing is the reports that he's not likable or doesn't go and play nice in the sandbox is because he pushed back when they told him.
The head coach, it could be former, it could be current, has told me Tom Flores is an asshole.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Has nothing to do with the Miami Dolphins. That dude is an asshole.
Guys are just like, what was it like Adam Gase is kind of one of those guys.
He's yes.
Not a fun
that player. Dude. Yeah. That dude is an asshole.
It's just not. Yeah, like not. But you had a lot of players come out and send a lot of heartfelt messages and tweets about Flores. I think the defensive guys, because he's a defensive guy.
Right. Right. So
it seemed like he did have a lot of affinity from at least some players in that locker room. But yeah, it's just messy, man. It's messy. And I think to your point, there is absolutely racism that takes place. And you want to make sure that when you're calling that out, that it's substantiated and that it doesn't take away from situations where it actually is happening. We'll see how it shakes out. We'll see. I mean, Bieniemy's still the Chiefs offensive coordinator. I guess maybe we can have this conversation next offseason to see where he's landing.
Honestly, no. If Bieniemy hasn't gotten a head coaching job by now, he's better off going to college.
Honestly, at this point, if I'm Bieniemy,
why? Yeah, why move?
Do you even interview? It's like at that point, it's almost a slap in the face.
If I was Bieniemy, I would literally stay in Kansas City and just be the head coach in waiting. And you know what? and that might not be the case either.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair, man. All right, dude. That's all we got for this week's set of topics. Appreciate the time, man. We're going to be beginning to preview division by division teams' predictions coming up shortly here. So I'm excited to do that with you, buddy. Yeah. But until
it's that time of the year, right?
It's that time. We're trying to get these in before the preseason so that we can have a nice clean slate and not let any other injuries muddy the decision-making. We're going to try and put our money where our mouth is from right now. Call our shot from pre-preseason so we can sound even smarter or maybe stupider in my case.
This time no, come on now. All right, buddy. Well, it was great talking to you again. Talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it, buddy. Talk soon. See you.